with Mr. Talbot in that first message within there, I wrote down words he said that God said this was coming about iniquity, and the world is a confused place out there. It's just something to watch, but that applies very well to what I'm doing as well. And the first slide I have on the board is the European Union, just to set the pace today. And my title is on that slide, is 10 Horns, or you could say Proof of God. And what brought this on was last Saturday, just a week ago today. This is something that Mr. Michael Bannon sent me. And so, Michael, you and Melissa, I see you sitting there. So thank you for sending this to me. And a week ago today, Pope Francis elevated Robert Schuman. Next slide. There we go. To a stage called Venerable, or level called Venerable. And it caught my attention, and Mr. Bannon's, I'm sure, because this man is known as the father of the European Union, and Venerable is a step on the way to sainthood in the Catholic Church. And so I would ask, is this noteworthy in any way that this has occurred? And it made me think, too, because I have on that slide Proof of God. And back to what Mr. Talbot said, God said this was coming. And I did give a message, I don't remember exactly when, 6 or 8 months ago maybe, where I said that we can prove God exists now using only science. And I mentioned flying to another planet and getting out of the rocket ship that brought you there and finding a new BMW, sitting under a tree, and then ask and think about this. What reasonable person, what thinking person would conclude the shiny, highly complex new car came out of the ground by itself? And you might do that because, after all, there's iron atoms in the ground, and you give the universe long enough time, they might have randomly come together to form the nice smooth hood and the rest of the body of the car, and there's silica in the ground or sand, and heat will turn that into glass, and it could have formed the glass of the windshield, and the instruction manual could have self-written somehow and gotten into the glove compartment. And that's kind of the evolution thought. But as we're finding, as we keep looking at that car, it gets worse. The more we look, it has a navigation system in it. And that works through satellites. So those had to get into space somehow. And independent of that car accidentally forming and accidentally then working with the navigation system in the car that you found. And then I ask again, who finding that car on another planet would believe that it accidentally assembled itself like that, what we're seeing? And the answer to that question is no one. No one is going to conclude that that's how that car came about. Any reasonable person would conclude there had to be a maker of this car that I've found. And more now, very intelligent biochemists, if you're following this out there, molecular biologists, other biological scientists are looking at DNA and proteins, kind of the navigation system and the satellite, and they're separate, and they had to come up together and magically work together. And the programmer, the programming of life, and deciding, no way. There is no way that this happened by itself. There had to be a maker. There had to be a designer. There had to be someone who wrote the program. It's the only explanation that makes sense. And God is more and more being proved from science. And I think, again, relevant to what Mr. Talbot said, not that we're probably inclined to listen too much, but we'll see. So today I want to again prove, I think we can do this, that God exists, but using the Bible this time. And there's many different ways we can do this, but for today I've chosen what's on these first two slides and a prophecy in the book of Daniel. But before going there, this book, Daniel, was written in the 6th century BC, and that's about 700 years before the book of Revelation was written, another book. So let's look in Revelation, and we're going to find a church that has greatly fornicated or mixed false religion into Christianity and has the mark of the beast on it. Revelation 13. And we'll look at the first few verses in that chapter. Revelation Revelation 13 and verse 1. Then I, and this is John, stood on the sand of the sea, and I saw a beast rising up out of the sea, having seven heads and ten horns. This is not understandable. This is unfathomable. This can't be interpreted, as I've said before, the opinion of my older brother, who's very religious. I saw a beast rising up out of the sea, having seven heads and ten horns, and on his horns ten crowns, and on his heads a blasphemous name. So here we have that religious association with this beast, with these horns, a blasphemous name. Now, the beast which I saw was like a leopard. So we're getting animals here. His feet were like the feet of a bear, and his mouth like the mouth of a lion. So kind of hold on to these animals and hold on to this beast that has seven heads and ten horns, because we'll see this many times. The dragon gave him his power, that's Satan, the throne and great authority, and I saw one of his heads as if it had been mortally wounded. One of those seven heads looked like it was dead, but it turns out that it wasn't. And his deadly wound was healed, and all the world marveled and followed the beast. So they worshiped the dragon who gave authority to the beast, and they worshiped the beast, saying, "Who is like this beast, and who is able to make war with him?" And I think we'll see clearly that the beast has to do with that first slide I showed of lands we're calling the European Union now. And this time in John's prophecy, if someone asked today, who is like Europe and who could make war with this power over there, what's the obvious answer? The obvious answer now is, well, the United States, of course, could do that. So it appears we're looking at a time here when the United States is no longer in the picture. Who is like the beast, and who is able to make war with him? And we'll see that Daniel pictures this same beast, as well as someone who will associate himself with that beast. But first, since we're here, let's look in Revelation 17. And the first few verses of that chapter. Revelation 17, then one of the seven angels who had the seven bowls came and talked with me, and that's John, saying to me, "Come and I will show you the judgment of the great harlot." So here we have a religious presence again, but not a good one, who sits on many waters, with whom the kings of the earth committed fornication, and the inhabitants of all the earth were made drunk with the wine of her fornication. So he carried me away in the spirit into the wilderness, and I saw a woman sitting on a scarlet beast, which was full of names of blasphemy. So here we have a wrong religious figure again, having seven heads and ten horns. Same number of heads and horns we just saw in Revelation 13. The woman was arrayed in purple and scarlet and adorned with gold and precious stones and pearls, having in her hand a golden cup full of abominations, this false religious presence, and the filthiness of her fornication, and on her forehead a name was written, Mystery Babylon. So we see now where this system came from. Mystery Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and of the abominations of the earth. So we find a woman, and we know prophetically this represents a church, and we could show that. I won't do that now. A church sitting on a beast and called the mother of harlots, which is going to ride or closely associate itself with whatever this beast pictures, whatever this beast is. So my question today, does this beast in Revelation and what we'll find in Daniel picture something long in the future from when Daniel and John wrote what they wrote, but is now mostly in the past, and as such, is it right there in our history books for us to look back on and see? And if so, my question is, could this possibly have happened by accident? So let's consider that as we move forward, and now go back to Daniel 2. Get my marker here, because I'm going to come back to Revelation. I think we just stay in Daniel and Revelation today, just these two books of the Bible. Back to Daniel 2, and I agree with Mr. Talbot. I'd like to go to these verses myself as I'm doing this so that we all have time to get there together. Daniel 2, this is a prophecy that looks ahead in time toward the rising of the same beast we just saw in Revelation, symbolically appearing in a dream to the Babylonian king, Nebuchadnezzar. And in this dream, Nebuchadnezzar saw a statue. And this comes right out of our literature here. I put a little red ellipse around in the upper left, the UCG booklet, from where this came. So Nebuchadnezzar saw a statue in the form of a man whose head was gold. I think this is very familiar to most of us. Chest and arms were silver, belly and thighs were brass, iron, legs were iron. And the feet and toes of this statue were part iron and part clay. So we're probably familiar with this statue. And from head to toe, each metal became less valuable. But as we went down through the gold to the silver to the bronze and finally to the iron, each one was stronger as we proceed down that statue. And then Daniel, under inspiration from God, interpreted the dream of the king and revealed that Nebuchadnezzar and the Babylonian Empire was the head of gold. And this is the way Revelation works, and this is the way Daniel works, and we can't interpret it, but God does for us. It's in here, Daniel 2, and the other metals represented empires that would follow Nebuchadnezzar or Babylon. So look in chapter 36, or I'm sorry, verse 36 of chapter 2, and here's Daniel, and this is after the magicians. You can imagine the king looked at them and said, I'm not going to tell you my dream, you tell me what I dreamed. And then interpret it, and if you don't, you're going to die. So a very difficult situation, and well, king, there's someone in your prison who can do this. And Daniel was brought to him to reveal the dream, and Daniel said, this is the dream. Now we, and I suppose he's saying this is really coming from God, not me, will tell you the interpretation of it before the king. You, O king, are a king of kings, for the God of heaven has given you a kingdom. Daniel makes it clear where you got your kingdom from, Nebuchadnezzar. This came from God. The God of heaven gave you a kingdom, power, strength, and glory, and wherever the children of men dwell, or the beasts of the field, and the birds of heaven, he has given them into your hand and has made you ruler over them all. God gave you this. That's why you're where you are. You are this head of gold, King Nebuchadnezzar. But after you shall arise another kingdom, and it's going to be inferior to yours. That's the silver and the gold, and another third kingdom of bronze, which shall rule over all the earth. And a fourth kingdom such shall be as strong as iron. So these are kingdoms that are coming. This statue, you wouldn't know, we wouldn't know if it wasn't revealed to us, is representing successive kingdoms in history. That fourth kingdom shall be as strong as iron, inasmuch as iron breaks in pieces and shatters everything. And like iron that crushes, that kingdom will break in pieces and crush all the others. And let's keep moving through these kingdoms. For as you saw the feet and toes, partly of potter's clay and partly of iron, the kingdom shall be divided, yet the strength of iron shall be in it. Just as you saw the iron mixed with ceramic clay. And so think about that first slide I showed just for now, that European Union. And as the toes of the feet were partly of iron and partly of clay, so the kingdom shall be partly strong and partly fragile. As you saw iron mixed with ceramic clay, they will mingle with the seed of men, but they will not adhere to one another, just as iron does not mix with clay. And now we have the time setting for these 10 toes. And in the days of these kings, the God of heaven shall set up a kingdom. So this is the return of Christ. This is the setting up of the kingdom of God, which shall never be destroyed. And the kingdom shall not be left to other people, so it shall break in pieces and consume all of these kingdoms represented on this slide, and it shall stand forever, that kingdom. So we found Nebuchadnezzar was the head of gold in Babylon, his Babylonian kingdom. This was in power from 625 to 539 BC. The next empire to follow. So what we have to do is go to our history books and look. Who came up next? Who was there next? We are in the history books now, but future for Daniel. And that next empire was the Persian Empire from 558 to 331 BC. And history, if we go back, next tells us The Greek Empire under Alexander the Great was the following empire that conquered Persia over the years 333 to 330 BC. And the fourth kingdom, who is there in history as we look, long ahead of what Daniel's time was, but now in the past for us, was the very powerful Roman Empire, which overcame the Greek Empire in 146 BC and was then historically present until 476 AD. So a little over 600 years for this strong Roman Empire was present. Four successive empires spanning over 1,000 years here predicted in Daniel. After Daniel was written, 1,000 years, and you know, I think we can stop now, if we want, proving that God exists using this dream, because these empires existed. These empires existed with no other empires interposed and with impossible details. If that was the point today, to look carefully in Daniel at all the details, impossible to have happened by accident. But some will say that this book, Daniel, it couldn't have been written at the time that our Bible ascribes to it. That's not possible. It had to be much later, because the accuracy of the total prophecy about these coming empires proves God. And maybe I'm not so good with that. So I'm going to say this book was written at a different time. And we could look, the Greek Empire being divided among Alexander's four generals, predicted in Daniel, two legs of iron representing the two divisions of the next, or the Roman Empire, with a western capital in Rome and an eastern capital in Constantinople. And there's quite a bit more here. So this wrong timing of writing is totally incorrect criticism, but you will see it. And we'll see that's okay. It doesn't matter, because this statue, what we're seeing before us, what the king dreamed, predicts more governments that will rise and fall long after 476 AD. And to clear that up, it is one of these, a little bit here and a little bit there, but Daniel had his own dream to help further make this clear. Let's go to Daniel 7. Daniel 7, and this is a dream of four great beasts, and beautiful, as are shown on this slide, coming up out of the sea. And remember, as we read this, the beast of Revelation with seven heads and ten horns also came up out of the sea there. And it's animals, it's the animals here that I'm interested in Daniel. So Daniel 7, verse 2, Daniel spoke, saying, I saw in my vision by night, and behold, the four winds of heaven were stirring up the great sea, and four great beasts came up from the sea, each different from the other. The first was like a lion, and it had eagle's wings. I'm going to jump to 5. And suddenly another beast, a second like a bear. Verse 6, and after this I looked, and there was another like a leopard. And so what we have here, the first three beasts Daniel saw were like a lion, a bear, and a leopard. And then the fourth was terrifying and very powerful. Verse 7, after this I saw in the night vision, and behold, a fourth beast, dreadful and terrible, exceedingly strong. It had huge iron teeth. So here we have iron again, as we did in Nebuchadnezzar's statue for the fourth kingdom. It was devouring, breaking in pieces, and trampling the residue with its feet. Same description we have in Daniel 2 for that fourth kingdom. It was different from all the other beasts that were before it, and it had 10 horns. So now we've got 10 horns associated with these animals. Exceedingly strong. Huge iron teeth, devours, breaks into pieces, picturing the great power of the coming fourth, our Roman Empire. 450 years before it showed up, Daniel is doing this with God's inspiration, and this empire crushed all who opposed it. But what I do want to notice here is it had 10 horns. This empire, now we know, has 10 horns, the end of verse 7. So what could these be? And in the Bible, a horn can represent a king or a leader. So we can keep that in mind as we move forward. So the beast we read about in Revelation 13 was like a lion, like a bear and like a leopard. So it had these same characteristics as Daniel's beast. I might have held that down too long. So we'll have a slide, Kurt, that shows our, from our literature, the seven-headed beast beside Daniel's beast that will be there in a moment. So that's the last slide we can, yeah. Same animals that Daniel saw in the fourth terrible head that was very powerful in the wording there. And the Revelation 13 beast we read about had seven heads total and also had 10 horns. Same animals, same heads, same horns. And Daniel has already told us these, as strange as they look, as strange as they sound, represent governments. They represent empires, coming empires that will show up. And what we're seeing in Daniel and Revelation is the same series of empires pictured. Nebuchadnezzar's empires in dream. And in Daniel 7, Revelation 13 and 17, that won't end in Rome. They don't end with that Roman Empire 476 AD, but will include successive revivals through time up to the return of Christ. And so I'm asking again, Daniel and John were looking long forward, but we're looking backward. And we can ask, are they there? Have they risen and fallen? And is this documented in our history books? The beast in Revelation 13 is blasphemous against God, the religious presence. And in Revelation 17 is written by the great harlot church. Same presence. Notice verse 8 here in Daniel 7 where we left off. Verse 8, I, Daniel, I was considering the horns, these 10 horns that came up, and there was another horn, a little one, coming up among them, before whom three of the first horns were plucked out by the roots. And I'll just say this little horn, I think we'll see as we go forward, is a false religious presence. And three horns were plucked out by the roots. And there in this horn, this little horn, were eyes like the eyes of a man and a mouth speaking pompous words. We'll find this in Revelation, against God, pompous words. So, okay, there's more about this now in Revelation. So let's go back. We'll leave Daniel and go back to Revelation 17. In Revelation 17, we read verse 3, so he, the angel, carried me away in spirit in the wilderness, and I saw a woman sitting on the scarlet beast, a woman which was full of names of blasphemy, having seven heads and 10 horns. And verse 12 of this chapter, the 10 horns which you saw are 10 kings. And so now we find that these horns do represent kings that are coming, who have received no kingdom as yet, but they will receive authority for 1 hour as kings with the beast. These are of one mind, and they will give their power and authority to the beast. These will make war with the Lamb. So these kings are the ones who will be present when Christ returns. These will make war with the Lamb, and the Lamb will overcome them, for he is Lord of lords and King of kings. And those who are with him, this is God's church, at the return of Christ, those who are with him are called, chosen, and faithful. So in verse 12 here, we're told these horns are kings, and they're going to have a short reign. Verse 13, we know this beast somehow is related to or has to do with the Roman Empire. Verse 14, they're going to fight Christ at his return. They're going to be so confused and influenced by Satan. And the time, that's the time setting for the final empire. So these verses are describing a progression to the final rising of an empire that followed that fourth empire back in Daniel. This is a system with seven heads represented by the beast on the right side of this slide. And again, that's an image out of our literature. A system that will rise and fall seven times in history. After the collapse of the original Roman Empire, the last of which will make war with the returning Christ, when that government, that empire, is up and fully assembled. And this is why we still continue to watch for 10 kings emerging from this final beast, our government system. So just to be sure, how do we know these seven heads do represent a series of revivals of the original Roman Empire? And the answer is that this can be seen by additional little bits of information from where we've been reading today. And Revelation 13:3 told us that this beast would include a head with a deadly wound, but it was going to be healed. So that's kind of strange. What does that mean? And what do we see in the history of Rome if we look at them? So the Roman Empire became immoral, and they continued to decline over time as they approached their end. And then they received their deadly wound in 476 AD when Emperor Romulus Augustulus was deposed by Germanic tribes led by a man named Odoacer. And it's all in our history books. We can look back and see this. So the question becomes, was that deadly wound to the Roman Empire when they were overcome, when they were displaced, when they came to an end, this fourth beast of iron, was that deadly wound, their falling, their end, really healed? Did Rome rise again and again and again seven times through history? So what else is here? Revelation 17, where we are, look in verse 9. Here is the mind which has wisdom. The seven heads are seven mountains. And we know God uses a mountain to represent a kingdom on which the woman sits. So this false religious presence is going to be with them on whom the woman sits. There are also seven kings with these empires. And at the time John is seeing this vision, five have fallen. They've come and they've gone. One is and the other has not yet come. And when he comes, he must continue a short time. This is the last succession of that empire. Still speaking of the beast, meaning empires, we were told by Daniel. The wording here is kings that have been, their reigns have happened and are gone. One who is, one more coming. These are words of a succession of seven kings or empires in the final Roman Empire, or with one, the final one being the 10-king beast of verses 12 and 13, which we already read here. And verse 14, again telling us when that last succession will be in power, because they're going to turn and fight the returning Christ. And Christ will return to destroy this false harlot system along with his first resurrected saints. So combine the information we've read in Daniel 2 and Daniel 7, Revelation 13 and Revelation 17, our booklet, The Final Superpower, and that's where the picture was on the third slide that I had of the statue, reads from Daniel 7, so I'll do that. After this, I saw in the night visions, and behold, a fourth beast, dreadful and terrible, exceedingly strong. It had huge iron teeth, parentheses paralleling the legs of Daniel 2. It was devouring, breaking in pieces, and trampling the residue with its feet. It was different from all the other beasts that were before it, and it had 10 horns. So we've read this, and then our booklet summarizes the 10 horns of Revelation 13 coincide with the 10 horns of this prophecy in Daniel 7. They represent revivals of the Roman Empire throughout time, leading up to the return of Jesus Christ. And from there, they go to Revelation 17 to show the horns of the beast represent successive kings, which we've already read. So here again is the big question. We don't need to worry about those who say Daniel was written later than it appears to have been written, because it couldn't have predicted these four empires, the Persian, the Greek, and the Roman that followed Babylon. So that's okay. How about these later 10 empires also predicted here in Daniel combined with Revelation? Are they there? If we look back into history, are these successive empires there, and importantly, each one possessing Rome? Possessing Rome as resurrections of the Roman Empire. And are the last seven of them actually Roman empires symbolized by the seven heads of the ten-horned beast? And here's what we find if we do that, if we go back in history. So I made that table to show that the first three empires that came after Rome fell were of non-Roman peoples, this Vandals, Harry Lee, and the Ostrogoths. And the Vandals began taking over Rome in 455 AD and fully did so in 476 AD. So remember now with me Daniel 7 verse 8, where we read about the little horn that came up among these other horns and spoke pompous things and uprooted the first three horns. If we go back in history and look at how these first three empires fell, the Vandals, the Heruli, and the Ostrogoths, what we find is the Catholic Church orchestrated the fall of these first three kingdoms. And we have a booklet on that, and that alone kind of tells you all you need to know about who the harlot of Revelation 17 is. And after those three horns, the seemingly fatal wound to the Roman Empire, the fallen Roman Empire, was healed. And you'll see it as the fourth line in this table, with Justinian's reestablishing of the Roman Empire in 554 AD. So it came back. This is historically known as the imperial restoration of the Roman Empire. In history, I'm looking back now as Daniel and John look forward. Do we then find seven successive empires in Europe? The final seven horns of the beasts of Daniel 7 and Revelation 13 and 17, and also the seven heads of that last beast. These being prophecies by God of the final seven resurrections of the Roman Empire that would proceed through history until the time of the end of the rule of Satan. These empires receiving their power and authority from Satan, that's Revelation 13, 2. And would, and this is really a very critical part as we look back into history, to proving the Bible and therefore proving God is real and God exists and is the God of this book that we have, would these empires back in history tie themselves to the little horn that we saw in Daniel? Someone who would blaspheme God and slander his name. The identity of this woman, this false church, the great harlot of Revelation 17, should become unavoidably apparent by historically evaluating which church was it? Which church formed actual and close associations with the past resurrections of the Roman Empire? And should we be shocked when we find, looking back, that this church has Roman in its name? The only church that associated itself with these historic resurrections of the Roman Empire was the Roman Catholic Church. You know this, it was Roman Emperor Constantine who decided to make Christianity the official religion of his empire. The Roman Empire, Constantine's Roman Christianity immediately began blending popular Roman Mithra worship with Christianity, and popes doing this to create a new non-biblical, and if we trace this Mithraic worship back through and into Persia and Babylon, it is Babylon the Great coming back. This is a Babylonian form of Christianity. And it was the Catholic Church and it only that formed historically readily visible relationships with the progressive Roman empires, such that these empires came to be known as the Holy Roman Empire, a very large religious system that was a stark contrast to Christ's description of his church as a little flock. As I kind of look around today, as a little flock, we could find that in Luke 12:32. And this is the small church of God that continued through the centuries of these empires on the board, and was often severely persecuted and martyred by the religious system, writing historic resurrections of the Roman Empire. And this is the reason this false church writing the beast empire is terribly described by God as drunk with the blood of the saints. That's Revelation 17:6. So now let's see if there is a clear history of Catholic involvement with resurrections of the Roman Empire through time. And what's seen in the next few slides is mostly out of our booklet that I showed in some internet searching that I did as well. A history of close Catholic church associations and working with different horns of the beast of Daniel and Revelation, including even crowning many of the rulers and sequential empires. So this is a lot of text, and what I've done to make it more meaningful is I put popes' names in red just so they stand out, and things about the Roman Empire kings in blue for the same reason, so you can see them. Dates are in green. But what I want you to notice, I put little dark blue rectangles around instances where popes actually crowned kings of these successive empires in history. So we're asking the question, which church was present with these successive empires, Roman empires in history? Because we can look back now and we can do that. And a lot of crowning there. I think I counted 10 or 11 of the empire kings who were crowned by popes. And this next slide shows Roman rulers who helped select popes. So the Roman Empire rulers were helping select popes. These were sometimes relatives of the rulers. And the next slide shows a summary of other Roman leader-pope interactions. And I know that's too small to read, but what I want you to look at as we go through these, I put some little squares toward the bottom on the left around Napoleon. They're showing up over one of these empires, and Napoleon stating, it's the text there that I'm sure is too small to read, the influence of Rome is incalculable. So of one of these empires, Napoleon said, he's talking about the Pope, he's talking about the Catholic Church, the Roman Catholic Church, the influence of them is incalculable to this system, this beast system of empires that move forward through history. And Napoleon made the Roman Catholic Church the official church of France. Next empire, we're up to the ninth now. Mussolini is working with Pope Pius XI to make Catholicism the official religion of Italy. So in that empire too, the church there is the Catholic Church, the official religion of Italy. And most probably don't know this, Mussolini proclaimed Italy as another resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire, not even realizing what he was doing. And the iron beast of Daniel, that fourth, and it would die, but it would come back, and it would come back 10 times. And this was along with the Third Reich, 1936, again the ninth successive of these Holy Roman Empires in Europe. And even Adolf Hitler signed a document to enter into an agreement with the Catholic Church, which he said, there will be no harm to you. We have a bond. We are together. Same Pope, Pius XI, where he assured protection of Catholicism under the Third Reich. So all I'm asking is, can we look back in history and see what is prophesied by God as having happened? And we've seen 6 resurrections. What about a final resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire? Has anything happened in our lifetimes? And I'm old enough, the answer is yes. We all actually are, but for me, the Treaty of Rome, well, okay, what was the name of that treaty again? The Treaty of Rome was signed in March 25, 1957 to start it again, to create the European Economic Community, the EEC. The EEC became the European Union in 1987, and it's worthy of watching as we are, as the 10th and last resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire, the biblical beast of Revelation 17, which will yet again ally itself closely with a woman, with a false church. So let me ask again about this last slide on the screen. Did we see anything to this effect only a week ago, along the lines of which church is allying itself with this last possible resurrection of the Roman Empire? 7 days ago, Pope Francis elevated the father of the EU to venerable as he moves him towards sainthood in that church. perhaps beginning this final prophetic association of church and empire. We might know, and I know we have noted, Great Britain voted to leave the EU on June 23rd, 2016, and that represented more than a historic decision. As the church has long been saying, it's an end-time prophetic necessity. As descendants of Ephraim, it was not prophetically possible for Great Britain to remain a member nation of this final resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire. I've mentioned before my good friend at work who is Catholic, and we were attending a business meeting. This was 24 years ago in Cincinnati. We shared a hotel room, and I was ready to go to bed, but for some reason he wanted to talk about prophecy, and it moved toward Europe, and I told him, one thing you should watch for, Great Britain is going to pull out of the EU. And I said, prophetically it has to happen. And I turned over and went to bed, and this was in Virginia. When I came here a year later, I brought him here also to work with me. And so he's in the same group, and when Brexit was announced, he appeared at my door that morning with one arm on each side of the doorpost. He said, do you remember Cincinnati? I said, yeah, I remember when we were there. He said, did you not tell me that Great Britain would pull out of the EU? I said, I did, and I'm just parroting what I've been taught. It's nothing special to me. But yes, I told you they would have to come out. And he kind of furrowed his brow, turned around, went back to his office. That was the last I heard of that ping brought up. So as descendants of Ephraim, they had to come out, and we've said that for a long time, and it happened. They could not be part of the final resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire. So let me ask again, based on what we've been seeing today, is there a God? Do cars come out of the ground by accident? How is it possible for a book written in 600 BC, over 2,600 years ago, to predict 10 successive empires in history? How could it predict the existence of a false church that would greatly adulterate God's religion and then show its identity in history by association with these successive empires? And the answer is clear. There was a creator of that car. And just as unavoidably, the Bible gives ample proof of the existence of the Almighty God. As creator, ruler, and sustainer of all things, and as the one now who is now producing a family of spirit beings, it's all quite real, unavoidably.